You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to this week's edition of the Civic Media Spotlight. We're kicking things off with the Maggie Dawn Show, and this week she welcomed on Harry Dunn, a former Capitol Police officer who was there on January 6th.
What is up, everybody? My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, folks, the hits, they just keep on coming every day. A new dumpster fire or fires, as it may be, from the Trump administration. I'm going to get to all of that this hour. The freeze on funding as issued by the Office of Management and Budget, the firing of assistant U.S. attorneys that worked on the Trump prosecutions, the internal investigations in the Department of Justice. You want to know what a witch hunt is? Now we've got one. But before we get to all of that, I am very privileged and humbled to be joined by former Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn. You know him. You've seen him on the J6 committee testifying with fortitude of both strength and courage in the face of the MAGAverse, I guess, would be a way to put it. And now speaking out both against the January 6th pardons that Donald Trump provided, shocking even some conservatives, but also speaking out against those current candidates for elected office, like Judge Brad Schimel here in the state of Wisconsin, who refused to acknowledge what actually went down on January 6th, what we witnessed with our own eyes, but what Officer Dunn himself experienced that day. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Harry. It's a real pleasure.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here with you. Hey, listeners, how y'all doing?
I hope they're doing well, and we're going to be made smarter and more engaged by you being here with all of us today, Harry.
Yeah.
What brought you to Milwaukee and Madison today? You were in Milwaukee earlier. You just left the Capitol Rotunda. Yeah. Why were you here?
The cheese curds.
Oh, damn straight.
Of course not.
Little custard and cheese curds for sure, my friend.
No, listen, you know, this is my fourth time here in the state. Seems like every time something happens in Wisconsin or there's an election of any kind, it always makes
it's
national news.
Yeah.
It's always happening here. I believe in public service. I believe in standing up and speaking out against what happened on January 6th, demanding accountability for not just the people who attacked officers, but the people responsible for it. It's unfortunate we don't get that anymore. We don't get accountability, especially now that Donald Trump has pardoned the over 1,500 individuals, many of whom violently assaulted law enforcement officers in the most brutal way. Why am I in Wisconsin? I believe that anybody that speaks of January 6th any other way than it was a attack on our democracy, it was the attack on law enforcement. If you don't speak on it any other way, I feel like it's my job to push back against you and tell you what it was. Especially when that person happens to be seeking office.
Yes.
And it's public office of the people. And like you just said, the Judge Schimel, he had the opportunity to forcefully condemn Donald Trump's pardons of these rioters, even the ones that brutally assaulted police officers. It appears he is attempting to play both sides.
Yes.
Saying that if you assaulted police officers, then you need to be in jail, but also saying he supports Donald Trump's decision to pardon them. You are not You can't play both sides on this. And this isn't about politics. I couldn't tell you Judge Simmel's stance on any other issue except January 6th and where he stands on the pardons. And it's personal to me. I was there. My coworkers were beaten. Four died of suicide afterwards. Yes. And the moral injuries just continue to pile on and pile up. And this was another one. So anytime I have an opportunity to push back, I will.
I respect that so much, and I'm appreciative for your clarity on this. This is a moral injury on top of the physical injuries and the psychological damage that those who assaulted police on that day committed. It is a moral ongoing injury that we all suffer as Wisconsinites and Americans. One of the things that bothers me about Judge Schimmel's stance on this, the talking out of his both sides of the mouth, is that Judge Schimmel used to serve as this state's highest enforcement officer and had the audacity to give out honor coins to people with the saying kicking butt every day. Oh, well, except if you assault police officers in the name of Donald Trump. Yeah. That is not how KAED works.
It's not. And it's like I said, that's really like I said, it's unfortunate. And I don't know the exact number, you know, but the polling on the pardoning of these, it was polling at 80% people not approve or opposed to this. So taking a stance to saying this is wrong, period, full stop, shouldn't be hard. Now, if he can't make that easy decision, then how is he going to serve in the Supreme Court and represent the people of Wisconsin's best interest if he can't even acknowledge the fact that the pardoning of those individuals was wrong?
The most fundamental, when I think about both law enforcement and judicial officers, and I have served as one in public service, you have served as one in public service, the test of someone that works in this capacity is not whether we investigate and prosecute the little guys. People want to talk about two tiers. I'll tell you what the two tiers are. Little guys and people that don't have connections and you know, pull and money, and those that do. The test is always not can we go after little guys. The test is what do we do when it is the powerful, the powerful whom we may politically be more inclined to support. That is where rubber meets the road for law enforcement and folks that work in government in these capacities. Harry, I want to ask you a question because we were talking a little bit before we got on air here. I got just a flood of text messages last night when news of the firing of these frontline career civil servant law enforcement prosecutors in the federal government were fired. I didn't sleep well. I haven't been sleeping well. How are you sleeping, sir?
Not well.
Yeah.
Not well, not long.
What keeps you up? Like what conjures up in your mind as we both, I think, you know, are trying to sleep?
I think it's the Celsius energy drinks that keep me awake.
Those are delicious. They are not a sponsor, but
they're
call
not
me.
A sponsor. Yeah, no, but what keeps me up is they're attempting and succeeding at rewriting what happened that day, and that goes to the firing of the AUSAs. These people aren't, they want, like, look, even before that happened, even before Donald Trump assumed office on the 20th, they were trying to suppress the Jack Smith report from being released. Right. So they're doing everything they can to erase what happened on January 6th. Not just erase it, but rewrite it with their own narrative by creating these investigations to investigate the investigators. Now, these people are career civil servants.
And prosecutors. That's
they are
law enforcement professionals.
They are
professionals.
Law enforcement professionals. And going after them, let's be clear. Like, look this up. Anybody that wants to call BS on this, I believe that Merrick Garland's Justice Department prosecuted more prominent Democrats than they did. They prosecuted Hunter Biden.
Yes.
Like, I mean, they
had a special counsel investigate Joe Biden over documents
Correct.
That he retained allegedly after he was vice president.
While he is the sitting president.
Correct.
So Biden's DOJ
investigated the president.
It's crazy. Let's be clear. Like, these individuals, they're attempting and succeeding to rewrite this. And that's what gives me this motivation to keep going. It's personal to me.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I appreciate everybody that says I'm making a difference. You know what? I receive that. I thank you. I don't care if I was talking to a wall.
Right.
Or one person. But I am going to continue speaking out. And I'm glad that it appears to be making a difference. But this is a travesty. And we can't let them get away with it. And everybody would say they are getting away with it. They are. there's an election here in April. There's governor races all across the country in 2025.
Yes.
There are midterms in 2026. And yes, there's a presidential election in 2028. And we can't focus on Donald Trump has won. We have to figure out how can we win the next one.
Yes.
And that's it starts now, not the day before the election.
As I watch what I'm just going to call mealy-mouthed, message-managed mumbo-jumbo from Democrats and news outlets alike, all I can say is someone who has served on the front line in 2020 doing this work, thank you for speaking truth. I, too, would be standing next to you shouting at the wall because if we're shouting the truth and trying to engage with the truth, I think that does speak to a different kind of moral clarity.
Yeah.
This is what we witnessed. Let us bear witness together. Let us listen to folks like yourself, Harry, that can bear witness to that. What is different now? We've been speaking about the firing of the AUSAs. To me, you take the firings plus the pardons, and what you have given permission to is something that is very scary in this country. What do you think the combined implications of these events are? Do you think that this is a green light to, frankly, roving mobs of people to do whatever they damn please as long as it serves Donald Trump?
Yes. Simply put, yes. Well, think about, they went to the Capitol on January 6th. They stormed the Capitol. They assaulted officers. They were emboldened to do so because Donald Trump told them to. Donald Trump told them to do this. Donald Trump pardoned them after they did that. And you know what? What's to say? They're emboldened now.
Yes.
Stand back and stand by. He meant that. He meant it. He literally has them on standby for whenever he would need them. And that's the kind of message that it sends. Also, the Senate, the House of Representatives, and this is why it's everybody's job. We have to send people to Congress. They're supposed to be checks and balances in government. The House and the Senate and the executive branch. We have to make sure we're electing the people that will stand up and push back against that. And not that they will go to Congress a la Ron Johnson and go to the Senate to serve the people of Wisconsin and not be a servant to Donald Trump.
Right.
You are responsible for the people of Wisconsin.
All of them.
All of them. Not just the ones who voted for Donald Trump, but everybody.
We got to take care of a tiny bit of business. I know I want to hear more from Harry. Specifically, I'm going to ask him how we tell going forward the difference between rhetoric and reality and what comes next. Stay tuned. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the Todd Alba Show, and every week on Wednesday, he is joined by Pat Kreitlow and Trigvi Olson. The trio chat about a new clip of a hot mic comment by Brad Schimmel, former attorney general and candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court, calling for another bloody revolution.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Alba, along with the outstanding producer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, on the board. It is 6 past the hour of 12 noon on this Wednesday, January 29th, 2025. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite, and it is very nice. Welcome into the show, everybody. Glad to have you along. It is a sunny day here in Mad Town, better known as Madison. But we'll begin here at home with the Supreme Court race, Brad Schimmel versus Susan Crawford, coming up this spring, April 1st. No joke. as Joe Biden mugs said, I'm not joking around. And we're never joking around when we have our friend, our colleague from Up North News Radio every morning from 6 until 8. Patrick Kreitlow joins us from the breezy and beautiful banks of Lake Wissota, and Trigvi Olson from the breezy and beautiful banks of the Potomac River in Washington, D.C. Patrick, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. It's a sunny, lovely day here up north.
And Trigvi, how are things out east, as they say? You made it back. Trigvi was stuck. I felt so bad for him. He was stuck in Belize.
Oh, I was.
Oh.
But you I was made... being held captive. I couldn't get back in the country. There were no flights.
But you're here now. You're here now, and that's fantastic. Guys, it's been a busy, to say the very least, and interesting, I guess, to some degree, first week plus of Trump 2.0. But I want to kind of bring it back here to Wisconsin because, again, as Pat and I talked about on his show this morning, my opinion is there's a lot more we could do in Wisconsin than there is in D.C. No offense, Trigvi, out there in D.C. But
absolutely taken.
All right. Very good. Very good. This was from, what was it, Zomers Heartland, who had the cut here? I'll make sure I give them credit. Heartland News.
Yes, Heartland Signal.
Heartland Signal. Thank you very much. I was the first one to find this. I think this is really interesting. I'm going to play it and then come back, get Pat and Trigvi's take on this. This is from last year at a Republican Party of Adams County. I've been to Adams County. Republican Party of Adams County meet and greet from last July. And now conservative Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Brad Schimmel was caught on an open mic or something, recording device, talking about what it's going to take to get this country back on track. And you'll listen to his own words, but it sure seems to me like he's open to actual physical violence. Here's Brad Schimmel from last summer.
If you look at the history of the world, if the history of the world is as wide as I can spread my arms, that's it, all of it. The part that is freedom is barely a gap. It's barely a spark plug gap between my fingers, right? And almost all of that history of freedom in this world has been us, what we've done in America. There's other places that have had some degrees of freedom, but nothing like here. If we let this go, it's gone. Mm-hmm. And you know what? To get it back, there has to be another bloody revolution. Mm-hmm. Because the socialists won't give it up. No. They won't walk away. Mm-hmm. And why on earth would these people be favoring socialism? Why? They know it won't work. We know the answer.
Power.
Follow the money.
The money and the power, right? Mm-hmm. And because with socialism, there's a handful of people who have all the money and all the power, and everybody else is screwed. Mm-hmm. These people, the Obamas, they all know which side of that they're on. They know.
I wanted to play the full cut so that nobody can say, you chop that up to make it sound a certain way. The quote from Schimmel is, quote, "There has to be another bloody revolution," unquote. Pat Kreitlow?
All right, let's try to take this in order. Number one, Brad Schimmel, get over yourself. All right, this whole thing of, America has been the spark plug gap of freedom. I'm so tired of hearing this. There's freedom throughout the world. A lot of it American soldiers fought and died for so that people around the world could have freedom. Don't make it sound like America is like the only one that's ever had freedom in human history, okay? Now you're waving the flag and wrapping yourself up in it for your own political aims. This whole thing of the socialists won't give it up. The moment anybody uses socialist, Marxist, whatever, you've lost me, because you've proven that you would have been a B student at best in political science of understanding what socialism or Marxism really is. Again, you're just throwing out words. Save yourself the trouble. Just go.
Pat, I want to follow up on, I thought you brought up something really, really good, and that is that in this cut from the Republican Party of Adams County meeting from last July that was released by Heartland Signal yesterday, that Brad Schimmel talks about, describing socialism in a small group of people with all the power and money and everyone else is screwed. But that actually describes the oligarchy, to your point, which is actually happening now on the Republican, the MAGA side.
The broligarchy with a combined net personal worth of $1 trillion, mm-hmm, sitting there in the front row of Trump's inauguration, He does not get to I don't even want to hear the words George Soros popping out of his mouth, because that's like his billions or whatever it is he's got is just a speck compared to Elon. But then add Elon and Zuckerberg, and then add Bezos, and then add everybody else that was in there. Please don't even pretend to lecture about money and power after you see how the broligarchy is unfolding and the way they're trying to freeze or cut so much federal spending in order to give these guys another massive tax break.
I want to get back to Brad Schimmel, former top cop, as they say, state attorney general in Wisconsin. The guy is supposed to uphold the law. He was quoted, of course, in the Wisconsin Examiner and on Vicki McKenna's conservative talk show in Wisconsin radio show, saying that he thought that the January 6th insurrectionists got a raw deal and was supporting them and supporting Trump giving them a pardon on January 6th. That seems to have touched a nerve, because we called him out when I had that show a couple weeks ago. We normally get, I don't know, numbers. How many comments do we get in our Facebook live stream? You know, maybe 5, 10, something like that.
Somewhere around there.
So far, 150 and counting, and about 145 of those are all negative from people I've never heard of defending Schimmel and attacking me. Again, Pat and Trigby, it seems as though we've struck a nerve here. The Schimmel people don't want us talking about that Brad Schimmel does not back the blue and, in fact, backs January 6th insurrectionists.
I don't know.
Who are convicted of crimes? They're criminals.
Right. I mean, and come on. Bots can have opinions too, right? Because the broligarchy can unleash a torrent of bots. Look at the wasteland that used to be Twitter, for example. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yes, it clearly does strike a nerve, and it gets them off their message. They want their message to be law and order, just not that law and order for these guys back here. And they're going to try to scare people as they do every year. There will be, I promise you, a TV ad with some kind of a scary black man in there, and that Judge Susan Crawford said blah, blah, blah. This is their playbook, and I would like to think that more voters are seeing through it.
Yeah,
I think it's less likely that they'll go the race way, though, Pat. I think it gets to an important point. Judge Crawford needs to come out right now and say, oop, I'll get it on the other side.
Talk about a tease. It's a placeholder. I love it. Bro. What does Judge Crawford need to say? Trigby will tell us on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's the Todd O'Ball Show for a Wednesday with Kreitlow and Olson on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
We return you now to the Civic Media Spotlight. We heard last from the trio of Todd Alba, Pat Kreitlow, and Trigby Olson, and we're continuing now with Pat Kreitlow and Up North News. He welcomed on Chris Thiel this week, a legislative policy specialist for Milwaukee Public Schools, to discuss a new scheme legislators are considering to hide the true cost of school vouchers.
All right, welcome back to our homeroom segment on Up North News Radio, where we're again visiting with Chris Thiel, legislative specialist for Milwaukee Public Schools. Chris, how are you today?
Doing well, Pat. Thank you.
Good.
How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thank you so much for being here for one of today's topics, which centers around voucher schools in Wisconsin, otherwise known as school choice, but is also something having a horrific impact on the funding for our local neighborhood public schools. And look, for all the years that this has been around, Republicans who have controlled the legislature for the past dozen years or so have been a little creative in how to keep taxpayers from fully understanding how much more money year after year after year is going into funding the voucher private school program. There's something that I think a lot of people think might be tried again this session when they do the new state budget. Some people call it decoupling, but terminology notwithstanding, Chris, can you explain what we might want to be looking out for in Madison this year?
The history of voucher expansion in the state of Wisconsin is one where I think it's fair to say, we have been as transparent as we could be when we're talking about what the impact of this will be. And friends of mine know I send out an article, Steve Castell, who is the Republican chair of the Assembly Education Committee back in 2015 or so. And again, this is a Republican chair of the Education Committee, made this point, and he may have been the best one to do it, where he just said, people have been unwilling to do the math and really just kind of talk about what this means. So decoupling, as it's being called, which is kind of frankly just a cute word for the next major leverage point in voucher expansion.
Right. So let's break that down. What, you know, maybe start with how do we kind of see what voucher schools are costing right now versus, you know, what a new paradigm would look like?
So there's a history of this. When this was only a Milwaukee program, it was actually, you know, presented as something that would save taxpayers across the state money because state aid was taken away from Milwaukee. And we had to increase our property taxes there at one point up to about $55 million of our property tax levy that was hidden in the MPS tax levy was going to pay for vouchers. So that there's been a change since that point. And now that we've had expansion of vouchers statewide, there's been a process where the voucher tax, as it's called, is hidden again now in your local school district's property tax bill. And so that was not
in other words, when you look at your property tax bill, and yeah, let's just say in my case, I see a dollar amount for the Chippewa Falls School District. And I think, well, this is how much of my property tax money is going to the Chippewa Falls Public School District. But 100% of that money, you're saying, is not going to the Chippewa Falls Public School District.
That's correct. I mean, if there is a private school in the Chippewa Falls School District that is taking a voucher, then there's a mechanism within there that is complicated to describe. But essentially, your local school district has to levy higher than they otherwise would to fill in a hole for state aid that is being taken away from them. So their options are two. Either one, levy a tax to fill in that hole, and you will not see that on your property tax bill. Or two, cut funding from the Chippewa schools and programming from the students. So what districts have been compelled to do is levy this tax. And now that it's broad enough across the state and the tax amount is getting high enough, we've reached this tension point where you can't pretend, and I think there was a history here of pretending to the point of Steve Costello, people didn't want to do the math, pretending that there wasn't this property tax impact. So now that there's an admission that there is, and there's a desire to change the funding formula, and that's what this decoupling moment is about.
Right. So essentially decoupling voucher school funding from property taxes. Now, many would say, and many Democratic legislators have tried, to just make property tax bills more transparent so that when you see a dollar amount for your local public school district, you also see the part of it that is, in my phrasing, skimmed off the top and sent to private voucher schools, even though you, the taxpayer, think it's going to the public schools. Decoupling, as I understand it, says let's just forget that whole hiding the ball charade, and let's just fund voucher schools directly out of the general tax fund. Is it it's more along those lines?
Yeah, it's you know, something called general purpose revenue, which I think if you're kind of a normal human being, you don't know what that is. Right. It's a term for the pot of state money. So the state would 100% fund private schools out of this central fund. Yeah. I mean, there's so much tension when we are compelled to increase our local property tax levy and the community, you know, that's a burden if the state is not paying its fair share. And right now the state is not paying its fair share. And so if you think about it, public schools would love to have that deal where we were 100% funded and we wouldn't have to have your school board set that levy and all the tension that goes with it. So this then for the private schools, the proposal simply is to have 100% of the funding come out of the state. And if you don't go through the process of thinking about what that impact is, on at first blush, it might sound good. Well, great, that doesn't have an impact on my local property taxes. But if you take the policy proposals, and this again, if we want to do this, let's just be honest about it and right, do the math. If you want to 100% fund a universal voucher program in the state of Wisconsin, which is what the proposals are. That means a voucher in every backpack is kind of the nickname. That's about $1.3 billion plus annually of state money.
Whoa, that no longer sounds like a small experimental program in Milwaukee like it was 30 years ago.
Right. And I just want to be clear. If somebody says, Chris, where did you do that math? Everybody's welcome to go look up DPI private school enrollment and then multiply that enrollment by the current voucher amounts. And the stated goal of some of these voucher folks is to have a voucher in every backpack. So that's fine. If that's what you want, Let's just do the math. And that's where the $1.3 billion comes from. And of course, we do a biennial budget. So that's $2.6 billion right off the top when you're putting together a state budget. And of course, as you've discussed before, we don't have enough money for special education funding for public schools and other things. So having the full policy discussion with the real math, I think, is the important thing to do.
And that's the thing. It would bring about that transparency to, I believe, help Wisconsin taxpayers understand the degree to which they are now paying for two separate parallel school systems in the state. And that leads us to Steve Kestell, who you mentioned, a former Wisconsin legislator. He's not the only former legislator in Wisconsin, Republican, who initially supported the voucher school program. But between folks in Wisconsin, and now we're seeing more frequently folks in other states, Republicans who said, well, I supported it at a point, but at some point it grew to be this thing that is actually, how are they describing it? Like as a danger to the general purpose of revenue of the whole state, right? It's gotten too big.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, there's been a, partisan nature to vouchers in the state of Wisconsin certainly. But I also say there are no vouchers in Texas. And Texas is a red state. And that's because the rural Republicans in Texas have been very concerned about the impact on their local school districts in rural areas. And I think Kestell's quote in that article is, if we just expand this without thinking about it, it'll put the rural schools funding problem on steroids, is a term he used. And then, since we've started, we've maybe been overlapped by other states. Florida's voucher cost is now in the $4 billion range. Arizona's is significant. So again, bottom line, if we're going to have policy discussions, let's lay out what the math looks like and what the cost impact is. And as we're about to do entering another state budget season, if there are different needs in different areas, we should at least be transparent about, what the potential impacts are.
We're not going to say that there's any one system that is perfect for funding public schools and maybe assisting lower income families that would like to attend private schools. But we certainly know and can recognize where there are things that are not necessarily good for the taxpayers or for accountability. And Chris, and we're talking to Chris Thiel from the Milwaukee Public School District. Chris, there used to be a lot of talk about the three-legged stool of funding, education in Wisconsin. But if you start funding the voucher schools 100% out of state general purpose funds, it can be a bit of a double-edged sword because, what the legislature funds, the legislature can defund. And, we see that a lot just in the University of Wisconsin system, where the legislature is playing games with the amount of state funding that's in there. So again, it just seems to me that the multi-prong approach that involves some state general dollars, but also some skin in the game from local property taxpayers, and then maybe what comes in from a federal government, that kind of a mix maybe insulates our funding for education from politics, but rather than putting all the funding eggs in one basket. I think for voucher schools, it might be a case of careful what you wish for.
It could be. I mean, and some people have argued that, if you see that total dollar amount in one place, then you have an understanding of what it costs. But all these things, to your point, are tied together. We broke the record last year of school districts going to operational referenda. 148 school districts had to ask that question because they needed funding for their students. This spring, from what I'm hearing from the Wisconsin Association of School Business Officials, we already have 59 additional school districts going to an operational referendum because of a lack of funding for schools, even as we have a significant quote unquote surplus. Hard to get a surplus when you're not funding your schools, but that's what we call it at the state level. So if you're it depends. Are we going to fund our public schools? There is a constitutional obligation to fund kids with disabilities, English learners, students challenged by poverty, and just our students in general. And clearly, something seems to be out of whack with our priorities if so many districts have to go to referendum, which, of course, has an impact on property taxes.
Well, and again, it plays a role essentially of kicking the can. The legislature can say, well, it's those mean old school districts that have to do this from here. So it appears that while, of course, there's a strong advocacy for voucher schools and private schools and public dollars and things like that, there does appear to be an increasing awareness that even among people who have supported voucher programs before, that without some kind of fiscal limits, constraints, responsibility, oversight, whatever you want to call it, you're going to end up with a voucher school system that's actually going to end up too big to possibly succeed with the taxpayers.
Yeah, and it takes me back to that Steve Castell article again. I mean, what Representative Castell said at the time is nobody has explained, and to this day still nobody has explained, how we are going to fund two separate systems. So if we're going to pour additional state money into one system while we're still last in the nation in funding students with disabilities, for example, we better have agreement that you're at least going to stand up and support the public schools in the way that they haven't been. And nobody's explained how we do both things quite yet. So that'll be on the table as we head into the budget.
Yeah, it just, again, just seems odd to talk about a $4 billion surplus when school districts, their state aid hasn't kept up with inflation for some 16 years now, that you might want to attack that underfunding first. As I've said repeatedly on this program, I will concede the point to Republicans that maybe the first thing is to agree on some kind of a tax cut, maybe a property tax cut. But then let's really look at the mechanism with which we're funding public schools and get that right-sized while we have a surplus so that we don't run into this problem down the road. But I don't know, maybe that kind of long-range fiscal planning is too much to ask for.
Well, I mean, Pat, I do think, I mean, because we're so connected between our property tax and school funding, appropriately funding our schools, increasing funding for students with disabilities actually will have a positive impact on property taxes. You would not have a record-breaking number of school districts going to referendum if they received the 60% reimbursement that the governor's talked about in the past, or the 90% that school advocates are asking for. If you had that level of funding for schools, you wouldn't have to go to referendum, and that would have a positive downstream impact on property taxes as well.
Chris Steele, thank you again for shining a light on where our tax dollars are going and where people are posing those tax dollars go when it comes to funding education. Chris is the legislative specialist for Milwaukee Public Schools. Chris, nice to have you on today. Thank you so much. Hope you have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
We will be back with more right after this. This is Up North News Radio from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Wrapping up Hour 1 of the Civic Media Spotlight, we take a trip down to Madison for the John and Gordy Show. Every week, they welcome on author and blogger Mike McCabe, this time to talk about our nation's former motto, E Pluribus Unum. Out of many, one.
FM 92.7 WMDX. We're back with Mike McCabe for a few more minutes.
Yeah, we were talking about your latest article, and in there you talked about a quote from Lincoln and our motto, national motto. Could you explain some of that to us here? Tell us all about it, because I think that is kind of the roots of where we kind of went wrong after a while. A certain kind of thinking took over in this country.
Well, you know, the founders gave us a national motto, E Pluribus Unum.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is Latin for out of many, one. Just that idea that you could create a single nation out of so many different states and so many different cultures So many different people. And that motto sort of defined the American experiment for the first 180 years. And then in the post-World War II period with the Red Scare, people fearing godless communists at our doorstep, decided to set aside E Pluribus Unum as our national motto, and they passed a law, and President Eisenhower signed it to declare that "In God We Trust" would be the national motto that from that point forward.
Which is already a division.
And you know, whether you like "In God We Trust" or not, what is striking is how very far away we are now from that ideal of E Pluribus Unum.
Yeah.
How far we've strayed from that notion. And when you think about how divided, how fractured our country has become, we are a long way away from that ideal of a country that is out of many, one.
You know, I always thought that if we could just insert what Lincoln had said about government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I mean, I think that's one of the best quotes ever that could describe this country. If we could just insert it just because they let us insert it into the Constitution. You know,
and that, of course, comes from the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah.
And that speech, maybe the greatest speech of all time, or certainly the best known speech of all time, was only 10 sentences long. It was less than 275 words, but it echoed through the ages, it and it's did. Literally inscribed. It's etched in stone. You can find the Gettysburg Address, you know, etched in stone in various places around our country, because it was only 10 sentences long. And that's when he said, he described democracy as government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And we are so very far from that ideal as well. We've allowed plutocracy, oligarchy to kind of creep up on us and sink roots, almost unbeknownst to much of the population.
I think Tucker Carlson said it best with "Daddy's home."
Oh, my God. I think they'll have that on Trump's memorial grave.
I think so. I don't know. You know, I had gone when I went to D.C. I went to the it was the news museum or
museum.
The museum.
Yeah, no longer exists.
Yeah, no
right?
longer. Mm-hmm. They took that away, and it was just one of the most inspirational displays I'd ever been to. And I can't believe that didn't support itself, or somebody didn't come in and say, I'm going to fund this because this is the most important thing that we have going for us in this country. And it went out of business.
It did.
It was just, I mean, they had these great quotes like, you know, government of the people, for the people, and they had all this free press stuff in there, and it was just incredible stuff. I you know, it kills me that that went out of business. And somebody in D.C. didn't think, let's keep that, you know?
I think they tried to keep, I think it's still, they have that online. You can see some of what they had, but I don't think they have a permanent address anywhere.
They had one of the pieces of the Twin Tower there,
did they?
I believe so. But I did go to the Spy Museum, and I got my FBI t-shirts there. which, by the way, you know, every time I see the FBI, they actually wear these exact t-shirts, and I'm thinking, wow, I'm walking around with a FBI t-shirt that they would actually wear on the job. It's something wrong there.
By the way, we want to mention that you, Mike, will be in Spring Green this Saturday, right?
Correct.
At Arcadia Bookstore. Yep. What's the time on that?
2:00.
Okay. And you'll be doing a little talk about
book? I'll actually be part of a four-author showcase.
Oh, really?
So I'll be up there with three other authors, and I'll be talking about my book, Miracles Along County Q, which is sort of a tonic for mad times. You know, a story about how cruelty meets its match as outcasts work wonders in a struggling country town. And
it's a great book.
And there'll be three other authors also who've written mysteries, and mine is a mystery of sorts.
Wisconsin authors?
Yeah, all Wisconsin authors. And so Spring Green. Arcadia Bookstore is a wonderful,
it's terrific,
independent local bookstore, yeah. And we'll be there on Saturday at 2.
So you're promising to reveal the ending of your story.
No, not at all. The piece I wrote for Substack is called Page 210.
Yes.
Yeah. And for those who've read the book, they can go back to 200. I was just asked, what's your favorite part of the part of the book? And I think a lot of people would think page 205, because a major secret gets revealed on page 205. But for me, 210 has special meaning. So I wrote this piece, but I for people who haven't read it, I'm not going to tell them what's on page 210.
But you got to buy the book.
Because you're warning people not to skip ahead and look at those pages.
Right, and you know, the last thing you should do is pick up the book and go straight to page 210, because you should soak in the rest first.
Exactly.
I just want to get a few texts here. Citizens United are the two words that we really have to take into consideration. If we can get rid of that, we can maybe get democracy back.
Amen.
Mike, good to have you with us. We'll see you next Wednesday. Tomorrow, Tim Slecker from Busted Pencils will join us. Stephanie Miller's coming up next. Hey, tell a friend, tell a neighbor, tell an enemy. You heard it on the John and Gordy Show.
That's right.
Have a great day.
As we were saying,
let the sun shine.
It's the John and Gordy Show.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.